So a few words on the practice and maybe something we could call Buddhist psychology. I'll start with a story that is not Buddhist. So apparently, I don't know if it didn't happen for real, but I like the story anyway. It probably did. I don't know. There was a journalist one time who was interviewing. I think a nun of a atheistic religion, and the journalist asked this spiritual being, "So when you pray God, what do you say?" And so she answered, you might have heard that story before, she answered, I don't say anything. I listen to God. And the journalist said, "Oh, yeah, okay. So what does God say? What does He say?" And she said, "Oh, no. He doesn't say anything. He listens to me." And I like that story because to me it's another way again to talk about how I understand meditation. You know, I'll tell you another story, just so we don't get stuck on God. A big presence or absence, I don't know, a big concept or idea. A few weeks ago, I was with friends and we were in the countryside and we stopped on the side of a little road in the countryside to see some horses that were far in the distance. And so we got out of the car and we went by the fence, and the horses, when they saw we were there, they started coming towards us, as it happens sometimes. Huh? And just that was really, I felt very lucky, you know, that suddenly there was these, but at that point they were small in the distance, but they became really massive as they were coming closer. These huge beings, you know, and that wanted to connect, you know, and they were coming kind of, I don't know if it's curiosity or kindness, or but there was something, and they came, and they came, but they didn't stop, you know, like at some distance, like, "Hold on, who are you?" They came, and so they were like, there was this huge face right there, like sniffing my hand and my kind of torso, like this. Really, there's something extremely tender and full, generous, you know, like, "We're together now, you know, we're, this, you know," and there was a presence, and I was speechless. I was touched. I was alive. And there was something happening that was, in a way, extremely simple, but certainly very beautiful, of just presence. And it was hard to. There was not much concepts. Huh? There was just like paying attention, because something precious was happening in that moment. That was going to last just a few moments, but also time was falling out, and that, you know, it was timeless. It was just the meetings of beings, and so there was this massive being, but extremely kind of vulnerable or exposed, exposing themselves and exposing fully their face, and I felt also exposed, you know, the chest, the closeness, and the. And also very safe, very. And so there was a, you know, what was the horse saying? Nothing. He was listening to me. What was I saying? Nothing. I was listening to the horse. Mm-hmm. You know, so God, horse. There was a quality of presence, kind of attunement, or something that was there, and. and it was clear the horse was revealing to me that I was alive, you know. The horse was noticing that I was really alive because of the quality of the presence. I was not in front of somebody who was blasé or busy, occupied, under occupation. There was a fullness there. And so, yeah, so to me that's what we're doing here. So, you know, horse, God, okay, so we don't have horses here. That's a problem.
There's deer.
Ah, deer. But there is also, you know, there is air. And there is silence or sounds appearing. There is coolness. There's breath, you know, there's plenty of life that where one can with which one can commune, maybe, or become intimate with. This is the practice we're doing, so we're just sitting here, and I don't know, for me it's pretty easy to it comes naturally to notice that there's hands alive, both alive and resting, and there's life, you know? So it's to me it speaks about reverence for life, listening to it, allowing it to reveal itself. So that's what the practice is. And then later it'll be with at home with the cat or the partner or the solitude. That would be a different taste of solitude, you know, not solitude with the group, but solitude alone by the kitchen counter, you know. And the invitation in the meditative awareness or is to actually just tune in to what is there. And sometimes it's the discomfort in a meeting, on the phone, you know, or the before pressing send, or, you know, and so we're invited to just feel that, feel exactly that. So we're not looking for another experience. We're just want to really notice this one, this experience, when the heart closes, or judgment arises, or vengeful secret thought, you know, just to be awake, or I don't know, the pleasure, the delight of self-righteousness. I'm right, you're wrong. It feels so good. Well, maybe not so good. Isolating a little bit. So in a way, no judgments, just any phenomena is worthy of being felt. And, you know, and what are we going to find in there? That's the field of what we call insight, vipassana, what we're doing here. Victoria VIMS, Victoria Insight Meditation Society. So insight is a wisdom that is developed from a really high quality encounter with phenomena, with the world, inner world, outer world, but really, and so here as we sit and walk and try to bring the mindfulness in the lunch time, we're developing a stability of mind, a quality of connection that is high quality at the moment of connection, but that is also sustained connection, so that we can get more of the information. So that's the listening. It's listening underneath the preconceived ideas. So hold on, what is that? What is the experience of wanting to be somewhere else or somebody else? I don't know if you have this sometimes. Sometimes just a flash. I want to be back home now. You know? Oh, hold on, what's that? Not in terms of thinking about it, but feeling it, if it's there. Feeling this. in these conditions, these are the right conditions for insight, for clarity, for a deeper understanding of what's happening to arise or reveal itself. There was somebody at a retreat, I think last year, somebody who had done from the standpoint of their past experience, this person had sat already two retreats, so they knew, you know, two retreats. Residential. So they knew. And so this person, I'm doing this totally not judgmentally, because I'm dramatizing the situation. It's really what happened, but it was a beautiful outcome. So this person was saying, so I'm there at the retreat, and you're giving the instructions, and I'm like, yeah, I know this stuff. I've studied this stuff. I'm about to teach this stuff. Two or three, that's enough. I can teach that stuff. So I was doing the sitting, and come on, get to the interesting stuff, you know. And doing the walking, you know, and the patient, and, you know, okay, I want the deep insight, you know. And but also, the person was doing the practice, you know. Tune in, and so this person is describing that maybe after a day and a half, almost 2 days of retreat, at some point during the walking outside, suddenly something that was unseen became seen, became conscious. Something that was there but unnoticed, you know, was brought into focus. And do you know what it was? The attitude of the mind. Suddenly this person discovered the attitude of the mind. I had not seen it. It was not possible to know it before. It was known, you know, because it was in operation. It was the truth, you know. Come on, I heard that before. It's pretty basic stuff, you know. Sensory awareness, aware of the quality of the mind, yeah. You know, and so suddenly it became clear. This is an insight. So this person saw the mind state of impatience or arrogance or that was there. And as an insight is often referential, it means it's not just here now. Like something is revealed about the way to live, or an understanding that has duration, or a pattern that is active in operation in the rest other moments in our lives. So this person describes it really well. She said, suddenly I saw the mind, the attitude of the mind, and how, you know, debilitating it was, how it removed a connection, you know. But also I saw that this was what I bring at least part of the time to my family, to the people I love so dearly. This is my contribution. I didn't know that so well, but because of the sitting, walking and paying attention, at some point it just was seen, you know. This is powerful, because after it, one's gonna probably have a little shyness or a little something, you know, before going in that attitude. There'll be a little like, really? You know, is that really the best way to live? Or, you know? So that's a psychological insight. There's an insight about a pattern, a way to live. And it didn't go through, I shouldn't do this, I'm going to stop doing this. It was not this. It was high quality noticing of the mind state and going through experiences at the sense doors, walking, sitting, being aware. I think she was describing being in the woods, you know, and being kind of blasé in the woods, you know, and suddenly... And how freeing that really has a taste of liberation, no? When somebody suddenly notices that. And it's not a judgment or like an injunction, you know, I should stop being like this. It's not like this. The release from that is the high quality encounter. That's how letting go happens. Letting go of a pattern, a particular pattern, is the deep noticing of the stressful nature or unhelpful or entangling nature of a mind state. So for that person, it took that form. And so I really like this form here of sitting for a few minutes, doing nothing, and walking back and forth, not complex, for a few minutes, because it becomes like a screen in which our mind states are projected. And in time, it becomes clear. The ways we live become clear. So sit here with enough impatience, you know, and a little attention, presence here and there, it'll become really ouchful, you know, the attitude of the mind. So it's so we soak in these mind states until we find another way to be with this. And, you know, another way would be that sitting here, at some point, there's a little wave of kindness. Oh, and it's so, I don't know if one way to describe it would be refreshing or so helpful. It feels, I'm putting words to it, but this is outside of words, it's not conceptual. I just feel this is helpful. It's a good energy. It's a good quality of mind. It's not entangling, it's liberating. And so we're touched by the quality itself and its helpful nature. So wisdom, we could call it discernment. It's discerning between, part of it is discerning between what is kusala and akusala in Pali. Akusala is not helpful for me and for others. Kusala is beneficial for me and for others. And that clarification we do by soaking in the different mind states and discovering in a felt way what is a better way to live. You know? And so in a way it seems very costly because we have to sit through a lot of epic, afflictive emotions and a lot of things, you know, to clarify. It seems really costly, but when we find freedom from a mindset that we've been under the spell of or entranced by or fascinated by or tend to validate or identify or follow, when we find freedom from such a mind state, even if there's been 10 years of hard practice behind it, the sensation we have is like, my God, that was really worth it. It didn't cost so much, because the experience of not being duped by this mind state anymore is so liberating, so powerful. Maybe I'll touch on and give you another example of something, because there's many ways that this will show up. But so there was one person just a few weeks ago was describing. So it was after 2 days of retreat, I think. Yeah. So this person was saying, okay, so I come the first day, I'm kind of exhausted, and it's hard to be in the body, but I'm doing your thing, you know, the sit walk thing. But it's painful, it's really painful to be in the body. And the way this was happening in French, but because it's universal, the chances it's translatable. So the way she was wording it was madula. I was sitting with the madula, my pain. And then I would come back to my pain. I don't know how. Is that an expression would be used exactly like this in English? I have the pain in my body, and this, and the walking, and tiredness, and the first day I do it, go to sleep, next day, oh no, it's the same kind of tiredness, probably visited. Usually this comes with doubt. What am I doing here? Why does he know what he's talking about? Do they know what they're talking about? Can I do this or not? You know, so pain in the body, aversion to the pain, tiredness, followed probably by agitation, get me out of here, you know. And at some point, this person, that I like the way they describe it, so she said, Pascal, I'm going to describe this to you. I don't know if you think there's something into it. I think there is, that's why I want to describe it to you, but it's almost like there's I have nothing to report, really. But I'll say it anyway, because to me it's huge, but I don't know how you what you'll think of it. You know? And so she said, so we were walking, then the darn bell rings, and then it's time to go sitting, and I think, oh my god. And on the schedule there was like 45 minute sits. Here we haven't done this before, up to now. But she said there was 30 minute sits and 45, and she said, oh no, this one is a 45. I'm going to die on the seat, you know. I can't possibly go back in there, but some kind of a social pressure, local momentary culture made me come back in, you know. Like, okay, everybody's going back. So she said, I was sitting there, I'm like, oh my God, you know. And she said, but I did, you know, pay attention to the best of my ability, try to be there, be curious about this, you know, everything you're saying. And she said, what happened is suddenly my pain became the pain. And she said, then I sat and sat. It was the same body, it was the same sensations. Then you rang the bell, and I was so quiet and peaceful, I couldn't actually move. Although there was pain there in that body, you know? But there was this little switch of understanding or vision or perception. It went from my pain to the pain. Mm-hmm. And she said, this is all I have to report. It blew my mind. And that's interesting, no? Because it seems like it's talking about something else, that the liberation is somewhere else than where we might think it is, you know? If I could get rid of this pain. And what she's describing in that experience, at least, didn't involve the removal of the pain. It was something else. And how I could see that this was an insight, well, the way it's described is so personal and so precise. There was presence there. And also it came with, you know, when the reporting, there is some joy and energy is released, it has a feel of liberation. And it comes with gratitude, because the person was saying, I can't thank you enough for the instructions and the, you know, although... You know, at home it might be really hard to describe, you know, like, hey, I went from my pain to the pain. But was it still there? Yeah, well, it doesn't work. and you know, so I'm going to go to the teaching of the Buddha, who it seems like he's talking about the possibility, at least. I was going to say promising, but let's just talk about the possibility of freedom from... What are the Buddhist teachings? Freedom from disease, old age, and death. That's a big claim. You know, freedom from disease, old age, and death. Somebody who was completely free, the Buddha, apparently, and experienced disease, old age, and death, but was free from disease, old age, and death. There's a conundrum mm-hmm. there. It seems to me that it's talking about a switch of perception because as I see it here, all these bodies are gonna go through at least one of these. You know, if they don't go through disease or old age, then there's gonna be death. Huh? But to be free from disease, old age, and death is pointing to some area of our experience, something. And so, to me, there was a really good hint of that when the person was saying the pain was there, and it went from defining myself as owner of it, or it, or to suddenly, I don't know, it seemed like there was a releasing it, like giving it back to life, where it belongs, you know? That there was something of not identifying oneself with something, but recognizing that it was there, you know, definitely there. There's something about the way one is holding, carrying, accompanying. Wow. And so that's the field we're entering when we come to practice here. It's, you know, that's what I presented early today. Huh, this is human nature. You know, you might take what's happening really personally, but in time, or maybe right from the get-go, you could say, let's see if we can recognize that we're actually discovering human nature, the nature of confusion, the nature of discomfort, of ease, of shame, of wanting to experience something else, or rejecting what is there. In the nature of acceptance, of curiosity, of intimate connection with reality as it is. Something about what happens if we, even for a moment, just a moment, release free life from our demands. What happens? Like if I'm like, okay, come on, give me the stuff, you know, I came here. Anyway, it's a beautiful day, I'm here in this basement. You know, if for a moment I release, just a moment, a mind moment, it's really short. I release life from any expectations that it should go this way, I hope, from any hope that it'll go this way, that it won't be like this, I release it. I free you for just a moment, or free myself, or free another, just for a moment. I like the for a moment because I can always go back, you know, to my ways. No, I'm always going to expect more from life, and that it should have been like this. I don't know about the future, but the past, I'm expecting the past to be different. I'm demanding the past to be different. What if it was like this just now? Or what if it really was like that in the past? Or what if it was okay just for a moment that we actually, none of us, know what is going to happen for the rest of our life, you know, for the rest of the day? What if we were just to consider this, that we actually all don't know what's coming? And can that be okay just for a moment? Just as an exploration, not as a new worldview, you know, a belief, or I don't know, for me there's something suddenly becomes, you know, there's something that becomes very democratic, you know, about worth and this and that, and all this kind of falls apart, and we're all human beings, not knowing what's coming. To me, that's the field of the heart, that's the zone, the field of compassion, of care, of consideration. I don't know, I feel that it's a rich field when we spend a lot of time, you know, trying to organize, plan the unplannable. You know, What if we were to let that go for just a moment and acknowledge that we don't know? I don't know, it seems like it's calling for a lot of listening. You know, it's like, wow, we better listen and stuff. You know, really tune in and pay attention to protect each other. Try to find a way. And so here the one of the qualities we're developing, Dhamma Vichaya, investigation of phenomena, is that angle of sitting here. If it's sitting, it could be any other posture, but while sitting, just noticing what is happening. It's not from the angle of moi, je, but what is alive? What is alive in life? And sometimes there is impatience that is alive. Sometimes there is ease in the body, or dis-ease, discomfort. And the practice is really just to see if we can allow this to be known, just like this, not wanting it to be otherwise, and not also appropriating an event that is happening in the universe. And like this, it seems like we'll go from a rigid sense of I, which comes from with fear of death, fear of future, fear of how it's perceived, you know, all kinds of difficulties. We'll go from a rigid sense of self to a more fluid one. We'll be able to pick up an identity, you know, that is appropriate, and let it go, you know. So as if I was always thinking, that's Anushka Fernando Puli, who I teach, I like this example. Imagine I always think I'm a teacher, you know. So I get after here, I go to the airport, and they say you're 27F. Like, oh no, I sit in front. They're like, no, you're a passenger. You sit in the back on the left. No, I sit in front of people. Like, not in this case. In this case, there's another identity. You know, be a little bit more fluid with your teacher identity. What's not appropriate? You know, and so taking this on and releasing it a little bit. Can I go a little? Can I go? Is there still energy to consider a little bit? Okay. So try a little chain of little different little things, stories I'll put together, and we'll see where if it leads to wisdom or confusion. So in the museum close to one place I was teaching at lately, there was an exhibit on consciousness. The whole theme of the exhibit was on consciousness, there was one little document on the internet that I think it was in the exhibit, but you couldn't. Somebody sent me the link anyway, and so it was many people having a little few words on consciousness from their professional perspective of their research or science, and so it's interesting, no? What is being consciousness? And so there was one botanist. In a way, this was a knowledge that was very, let's say, Eurocentric. It comes from the Enlightenment, or, you know. So a botanist came, and I don't know if. So it was a Eurocentric kind of knowledge of botanists. So the person said, plants. So I'm going to use all these suggestions or ideas for us. It's for research for us, you know, as we sit and walk. So we can say, what is consciousness? For how are we experiencing it? And so the botanist said plants, they don't have consciousness of themselves, but they have consciousness of the environment. That's why the, you know, the roots go follow gravity towards the bottom. That's why the flower looks for the sun. That's why sometimes some of them bear their fruits in the shade and dampness, so it can. So it has a really good consciousness of its environment, but it doesn't have a consciousness of itself, which made me think that it was quite the opposite of human beings. Often, they're really conscious of themselves, but not so much of the environment. Hey, I'm here too. No, it's about moi. And so that was one suggestion. And then another one was that I was really interested in was somebody, a biologist, talking about, I think, a particular kind of monkey, and saying this, we know that this type of monkey has is able to represent itself in its own mind. You know, it's able to make an image, moving image of itself. Because you'll see this, sometimes you'll see this monkey look around and grab a little rock, and then walk around and grab nuts, and then walk around some more and find a bigger rock, and we'll use the small rock and put the nut on and to break it open to feed himself. So the biologist was saying it's really important that it's conscious of itself, it's able to represent itself, create an image of itself. It's a concept, it's a created thing in the mind, and then it makes a plan. You know, I'll go grab a little rock, then nuts, then I'll, you know. And so it's able to survive because it's able to create a little self in the mind and, take care of itself. And I don't know, when I heard this, I just saw my mind and the mistake, you know. So I made a little representation of Pascal, you know, going back home, I don't know, cooking something, you know. Oh, I'll take a pan. Oh, I'll take this rice. Oh, I'll put some water. You know. Oh, I'll put it there. And then, oh, food. So this is a device that is good to help me survive. But I don't know if you see the mistake. Like, if we go a little too far, we start believing in that little thing. And then we're totally engrossed with it. Not only is it going to take a pan and rise, but also what does it look like? How is it perceived by others? And like it becomes extremely complex, but we become fascinated by this representation. It doesn't exist. You know, in the mind, it's a representation. It's a symbol. It's a device for survival. But for us, we become totally engrossed with it. We fear for it. We talk to it. Do you see what I mean? So the Buddha was saying, somebody is saying to the Buddha, oh, do you say I, with all the things you talk about, do you say I? And the Buddha says, I say I, but I know the limit of that language. I know that a representation is a representation. In that same little website thing, Charles Genoux, a meditation teacher, was saying consciousness is an event, something that can be experienced directly. Like now, it's what registers colors. It's what is vibrating to the senses. You know what makes pleasure known. Do you see what I mean? But it's alive now. And Charles Genoux was saying, and we represent it, we create a representation of it, because it can only be experienced here now. It's like the eye cannot see the eye. It can only experience sight. But because we are a little frustrated about this, and because we're a little conceptual, we create a little eye. And then we get stuck with it. What is going to happen to I? Do you see a little bit the confusion? It's not I think it's worth trying at least to talk about it some. So the Buddha says that 2,500 years ago. I say I, but I know the limit of this language. I know that there's something that it can be experienced there, but you cannot make a thing of it. It's alive, it's changing, and it doesn't exactly belong to I. There's consciousness there, but one day it's not going to be there, or it's going to change form, or... But we're like, no, it's me. This definitely is life. I'm not debating this. This definitely is pressure on the butt at this point of the talk. But the little Joseph Goldstein says he created a little character in his mind. What is the name of the character? Wasam will be. And he said, every time this little representation would come in, I will tell this to this person. I did that in the past. I will do this in the future. He would say, oh, wasam will be. Wasam will be. Wasam will be is there. That activity of mind, that representation, that generation, that creation of mind. Let's not be fooled and think it really absolutely exists and it's it and, you know. And certainly for many of us, let's not spend more time with the representation than with the actual experience. Do you see what I mean? I don't care about sitting and walking here, being here. I want to think about myself later today or in the past, who I could have been. Not even the one I was, but the one I could have been is much more fascinating. Like I'm much more like fiction than reality. Reality seems a little boring. Or I don't know how to be with reality. What I've learned to do is be with fiction, story told, and I'm engrossed, and I'm fascinated, and there's so much more energy around that than anything else. You know, sit me here and tell me to just feel, I'll fall asleep. But tell me to think of myself, represent myself, where I might end up alone over there. You know. This has a lot of energy to it. I don't fall asleep when I do that. And so here we're bringing at least a little balance. You know, we've gone a little upside it, or gone overboard, let's say, with representation. And we say, like, let's pick up representation just to plan the meal, like the bonobo, you know, and then drop it. And then learn to live, learn to experience life here. Be alive here, that's where it tingles, that's where it's happening. So, with raising your hand, did I create more confusion or clarity? And so here we're going for the direct experience. What is it to be conscious? And the mind will suggest, yes, very interesting, but let me represent myself later. And if you want, you can switch the image of yourself doing whatever you'll do later or did in the past by a little monkey. And see if it's as fascinating. You know? And maybe that'll be a way to introduce renunciation. And why not be here? A breathing system, being touched by cold and warmth and images, and be aware of what is the sensitivity of that... What is that thing called consciousness? Instead of representing it, making a symbol out of it, and being hooked with that little plaything. Let's sit a little bit here for a few minutes and just see the representation itself show up or not. Thank you. It's not that we should be ashamed or harsh or anything if it comes up, that self-obsession, fascination, creation. But at least not be totally duped. There's a story being told. Maybe we can be interested in what is happening here now. What is happening here now? There's a body sitting here. Breathing. Hearing. There is also inner sensitivity, fear visiting sometimes, or sometimes acceptance or benevolence. Be aware of what's presently arising. Let's, for a few moments, encounter life and listen to it like one would listen to God. May our presence, our curiosity, and our care be redirected, reoriented towards life happening here now. So that we can discover how it's held, how it's met. Presently. That we can find freedom here, in this heart-mind.